our last discuss of the Soul Convention, and our brother Edmund Jesuit will serve us at this time. And as he said, we are serving truth and righteousness. I'm sure that we will give much thought on this particular subject, which will help us in the days ahead. Have a good day.
First of all, friends, I'd like to bring you the Christian love and greetings from your brethren in Chicago. Our subject this afternoon is entitled Truths of Righteousness. And if you have your Bibles with you, I wish you would turn with me to the 92nd Psalm, reading from the 12th to the 14th verses. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. The symbols and the illustrations in the Bible have always intrigued me. Because in these symbols and illustrations, I find a depth and a wealth of meaning. And it seems that they take on added importance and significance when we realize that God Himself personally had selected these illustrations, these pictures, for our learning and edification. And so our illustration today is going to be about trees. Not all trees, but a select brand. And this is branded by the psalmist, speaking of a palm tree and a cedar of Lebanon. And the psalmist likens these trees to the righteous class, that is, the people of God. Often we are asked the question, well, why didn't the Lord give us the simple language by which we could understand His Word? Why did He give us so many pictures and illustrations, symbols and types, and sometimes even ambiguous language that's rather difficult to understand? Well, we might reply that for the same reason that gold isn't found on top of the ground where you can readily see it and actually you pick it up. The Lord apparently wants man to dig not only for spiritual treasures but even for earthly treasures. And as we know, treasures are always hidden and it takes effort to dig them up, whether they be earthly or spiritual treasures. But now, the question is, why did the Lord liken the righteous to a palm tree? What is it about a palm tree that could be likened to a righteous man? Why didn't God choose another tree, an oak tree, a maple tree? Why did it have to be a palm tree? Well, first of all, the palm tree that we are referring to is the date palm, the one that bears fruit. We're not referring to the one that grows in our country in the state of Florida or in California, known as the Palmetto tree. It doesn't bear any fruit, and that's not the one that the Bible is referring to. Now, the date palms are really princes in the vegetable kingdom. You've all seen pictures of the date palm. It has that beautiful cylindrical trunk, and that goes up until it reaches a nice spray of leaves, as it were. And then in the shadow of these leaves, if you look close enough, there you will see beautiful clusters of fruit, dates. Certainly, a tree couldn't look more lordly and bountiful as a date palm. Now, this date palm in height is anywhere from 30 to 80 feet high. But the strange thing about a date palm is that after it's planted, it won't bear fruit until after, say, 9 or 10 years. But then, once it continues to produce fruit, we're told that they will produce fruit for at least 100 years. And not only that, it will produce for its owners almost 4 tons of dates. Now, in all of forestry, the palm tree is the most peculiar of all trees. If you've studied trees, that is the only kind of a tree with that shape that the palm tree has. It seems to stand in the class all of its own. Every other kind of tree is different, but this palm tree seems to be in the class all of its own. Then we learn also that the seasons of the year have little effect on the palm tree. You could have a rainy season or a drought. It makes no difference to the date palm. It continues to grow and produce its fruit as if nothing happened. Then, too, it has a rather strange root system. Of all the trees in this world, the date palm has the fewest of roots. And if you read about the date palm, you know that it only has one root. And that root is just like a carrot. It's the main tap root that goes into the ground, and maybe you've got little wiry rootlets coming off that main tap root. Then, usually, the center of any tree is the hardest. But not so in the base palm. The very opposite is true. In the center, it is spongy, soft. And as you go out toward the trunk, then it becomes hard. An altogether different kind of a tree. Then, practically, all of the palm tree is utilized. The leaves are used for roofs and sides of houses, the fences, framework, anything that they could make out of it, they do. Then it's fruit that gives sustenance to the people. And even these stony seeds, if you eat dates, even these seeds are ground up and they give nourishment to the camel in the desert. The Arabs have found that they could use the date palm in some 360 uses. In 360 ways, they found use for this palm tree. And certainly, it would be difficult to name a more serviceable tree than this date palm. Not only is it fruit a daily article of diet, but we're also told that various preparations are made, such as medicines, tonics of one kind or another. As I mentioned before, the leaves make pouches and baskets and things along that line. And from the trunk, which is much stronger, they can make fences and even framework for the houses. And then, too, by squeezing some of the fruit and the leaves, they receive an oil that could be used for fuel. The palm tree is also alluded to in the New Testament. The place that Jesus went to many times, Bethany, that word means date. The word Bethany means date, the house of dates. Then the palm tree grew in the neighborhood of the Mount of Olives, and that's why you remember when the people welcomed Jesus as he rode into Jerusalem, they had these palm trees which they put in his path as he came toward Jerusalem. Then we have something very interesting in connection with the visionary temple of Ezekiel and the real temple of Solomon. Solomon covered all the walls in the Holy of Holies with palm trees. These were carved in wood and then overlaid with gold. The doors of that entrance were made of olive wood, but in the olive wood were carved palm trees. Ezekiel's temple, as we consider that temple, had carvings of palm trees on the posts, the gates, the walls, and the doors. Now, since the typical temple of Solomon pictured the real antithetical temple, these trees, the date palm, must have had a significance. And I think that the psalmist had that in mind when he wrote these verses, that these righteous, which will flourish like a palm tree, these are going to be planted in the house of the Lord. And that's what the psalmist had in mind. But first of all, I'd like to glean some spiritual lessons that I think the psalmist David had in mind concerning this illustration that he uses of the palm tree. Now, as we mentioned before, the palm tree is peculiar. It's most peculiar of all trees. You name any tree, and there's none like the palm tree. It's like that tall pole sticking up, and then you look up on top, and you've got a little tuft of green. And really, when you analyze the palm tree, there's nothing about it to invite admiration. There's nothing special about it. And so when we begin thinking a little bit, the Lord's people are just like that palm tree. There's nothing about them that would command respect, the admiration from the world. Well, they don't think much of us, do they? We have really nothing that the world admires. They don't like that kind of a character. And certainly, the saints are a most peculiar brand. There's nobody like them on the earth, is there? Just like the palm tree. It's different. It's distinct from all other people. Then we find that the palm tree grows straight, just as straight as can be. Any picture you see, you never see them going out in an angle before that, but they're always just as straight as can be. And that could illustrate the intention that we, as Lord's people, have. Our intentions are always heavenward. We're always looking up. That's our intention. And you notice the palm tree, it hasn't got any branches sticking out from one end or the other. There's no branches at all. It's got leaves way up on top. And so that picture, the Lord's people don't have any side branching, or this side or that side. No, the one intention is always up there. They do not branch either to the right or to the left. Not only that, but of all the trees, the palm tree, they cast the least amount of shadow. In other words, it doesn't interfere with the growth of its neighbors. If there's a tree living next to it, why, it isn't going to shut out the sunshine. If there's a plant there, why, the rain will get there just as well. And so the Lord's people are the same way, the righteous. They don't interfere with their neighbors. In fact, they're interested in helping others grow. The saints will always assist others to grow. Then again, of all the trees, the palm tree is the only tree that has the softest core. And that's a picture of the heart condition of the Christian. He has a soft heart, because it is this kind of a heart that the Lord is able to use. And this is the kind of a heart that will carry us through into the kingdom. Then, a peculiar root system of the date palm. Of all the trees in the world, it has the fewest of roots. In other words, it has the least holds upon the earth, upon the ground. All it has, as I've explained before, this main top root, like a carrot, with these little rootlets coming out. And we look at the righteous, and we find that they're in the world, yes, but they're not of it. All the vitality that they derive out of this world, their talents and whatever they might have, is used for one purpose, and that is to look toward heaven as it can to them. We're not concerned in securing any earthly rights or privileges, but we, like that palm tree, want to have the least possible hold upon the earth, because we're laying up treasures up in heaven, not upon the earth. And that's why the psalmist says we're going to flourish like a palm tree. Then, there's another characteristic which is peculiar about this tree, and that is that it'll never be repressed or suppressed. You can't hold a palm tree down. Supposing that you had planted a palm tree, then you lay a stone over the place that you planted that palm tree. When that tree would begin to grow, it would either knock the stone over, if the stone wasn't too heavy, or
Well, if it was too heavy, that tree would go like this, and then get around the stone and continue upward. Not too long ago, I heard a story that proves it very nicely. In the early days of California, when it was being settled, a settler had built a little cabin right over a place where a date palm was beginning to grow. And he had to go away for a little while someplace. And when he came back, he was wondering what had happened. Because that date palm not only went through the floor, went through the ceiling, and it was growing up on top. There was right through all of these things, right through his cabin. And so the lesson could be for us that the things aren't easy to press. They're really a determined lot. They have an objective in view. They have that one course that they're thinking about, and that is heavenward. And so the Christian refuses to be hindered by the difficulties and the besetments of this life. If it's impossible for a Christian to remove an obstacle, why, he's going to go around it, over it, or sometimes he'll even go right through it, like a palm tree did through that cabin. Earlier, we asked the question, well, why didn't the Lord use a different kind of a tree? Don't use an oak tree, it's a beautiful tree with all its branches and nice trunk and beautiful shades and so forth. Why didn't you select an oak tree? Well, the oak tree, like any other tree, for about 6 months out of the year, appears dead. You go out to your park here and what do you see? There's a leaves on the tree? It's dead, practically speaking. Sure, in the springtime, it will resume its life, but for the time being, it's dead. And so, the Lord certainly wouldn't want his people dead half of the time that they've been here upon earth. He'd like them to show life all the time. And so he wants them to be just like a palm tree, evergreen. It never stops for winter time, nor it continues to grow and flourish continually throughout its lifetime. Then we note further that the older a palm tree becomes, the more sweeter, the more luscious that fruit becomes. Besides this, it is there an early fruit and a later fruit. And how beautifully this fits a saint that has been in the way for quite a while. And that's what the psalmist had in mind in verse 14. He says, they shall bring forth fruit in old age. And I'm sure that you've had experiences like I've had with older brethren, where that fruit of the Spirit is so sweet that you can almost taste it. His journey along the way has made him so sweet. You can see the fruit. They shall be fat and flourishing, said the psalmist. Then there's another odd thing about a palm, and that is in the desert lands where it survives, the land is usually dusty. You may get a little windstorm, and first thing you know, you've got dust all over the place. And this dust will appear to every tree in the vicinity, except the date palm. For some unknown reason, that dust won't settle on those leaves. But another tree, it seems to just lay on there and just lay. And doesn't that beautifully picture the righteous, how they can keep themselves unspotted from the influences of this world, free from these from being contaminated with this, shall we say, doctrinal dust created by somebody's wind? It seems that we're able to do that. We don't get that dust settling on our leaves, as it were. We're able to be clean. Yet one more thing. In Palestine, where this date palm grows, there is a vine growing, it's a poisonous vine. This is known as a tree killer. And its name is derived from the fact that it could kill any tree in which it comes in contact with. And the way it does that, if it begins growing next to a tree, that vine will enshroud itself around the tree, the branches, the trunk, and every which way,
shut out the sunlight, and then its roots will penetrate into the root system of the tree, and soon that tree will die. And all you see is a form of a tree, but actually the vine is covered with and snuffed its life up. Now, no tree is known that will successfully resist the action of its tree killer, except the one tree, and that is the date palm. And it doesn't make any difference how many tree killers, how many vines go alongside it, that date palm will survive. It is. It cannot kill the date palm. And so when we look at the righteous class, the same thing is true. Many and severe may be our troubles, our disappointments. We have poisonous influences that are always around us. And many times the burdens are heavy. And they seem almost sometimes to destroy us. But the same gospel. They live on, they survive, just like the palm tree. Because the palm tree is going right up heavenward. And that's the same story. Yes, the righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. But now the psalmist David spoke of another tree. He says that the righteous are going to grow like the cedars of Lebanon. The theme that the Lord wished to describe yet another part of the Christian character. And so he selected another brand of a tree, and that is the cedar of Lebanon. Now, the cedars of Lebanon grow on a mountain. They're found nowhere in the world except on the Syrian range of mountains, which are about 6,000 to 8,000 feet high above the Mediterranean. And you'll never find that tree in a low place. It's always up on that range of mountains, the Syrian range of mountains. And of all the trees, the cedar of Lebanon grows on the highest elevation. In fact, it grows above the snow line. That is the only tree that grows as high, that is the cedar of Lebanon. Now, these trees, just like the palm tree, is evergreen. It never dies. It's always green, always growing. And they're very large trees, too. Some of them have measured 47 feet in circumference. And they grow about 80 feet high. They're more of a boxy type of a tree. Now notice that the Lord was specific. He didn't just say the righteous would be like a cedar tree. But he took, in addition, a cedar tree like in Lebanon. And that's important. Because these that he was talking about only grow in the vicinity of Palestine, on the Syrian range of mountains. Now this wood from the cedar is different than any other cedar wood in the world. First of all, it grows on the highest elevation, 8,000 feet high. Now that's pretty high for a tree. And then when we begin applying it, we find out why the Lord used the cedar of Lebanon. Because the prophet Nahum declares in 1:15, he says, "Behold, upon a mountain the seat of him that bringeth good tidings of public peace." The inspired writer refers to our Lord Jesus and us as his church. And the head of this great institution was born over 1900 years ago. And we, the members of his body, the last members, the feet, as it were, are in the process of being born right now. And then in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 4, there he tells us that his feet, Christ's feet, shall stand upon a mountain. In other words, we really are standing in an exalted position. As far as the world is concerned, we're way up high, we're exalted. Because from this elevated point of view, we seem to command an unobstructed view. We can see everything, as it were. We look to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. And we have a full view. And that's a picture that we can see every detail of God's plan.
we can see it all because we're standing up high. We can see what goes down below. They can't see, they're down too low. But we're up high, and so we can have that view. We can see everything at once. And the Bible says that the natural man can't see the things of the Spirit. Why? Because he's down way below. He can't see the higher things. But we up high in this exalted position, and in every time we get the true view of the whole thing. Then, the word Syria means Thailand. The word Lebanon means white mountain, and white means pure. Mountain means kingdom. And there you have a beautiful picture. We're promised a place in God's kingdom. Now, Lebanon wood, cedar wood, is red in color. And you smell it. It's got a beautiful odor, fragrance. And you could build something out of it, very durable. Now, even the color red is significant. That could represent the blood of Christ. And often we sing that we're washed in the blood of the Lamb. And the Bible also speaks of the saints as being a sweet odor in the nostrils of Jehovah. And aren't we just that? The righteous Christ is certainly, as the apple of his eye, certainly they have that sweet odor that he is able to take in with his nostrils. Then the cedars of Lebanon are stout of trunk. They make excellent building material. And reading about Solomon's temple, we find that the cedars of Lebanon were used in the construction of that temple. And it pictures the righteous as being staunch, stout-hearted, strong, durable. They are of the proper temple material. And just as these trees upon the mountain range are not uprooted by fierce storms that would blow them over on these mountains, and so the saints will remain upright regardless of the storm and the winds that blow, very sound, just as straight as could be. Then we find out that the cedar of Lebanon is very costly, very expensive. First of all, because it's shared. And not only that, but it's difficult to obtain. You have to climb all those thousands of feet to get it, and then you've got to bring it down again. And just as in the temple of Solomon, everything that went into that temple was rebuilt, costly material, so in the spiritual temple that God is building, it's not going to be just any kind of a material. It has to be the best. It has to be costly. And in the Lord's estimation, we have the timber property, as it were, which is a requisite for God's temple. He wants the best. He's going to get the best, the costliest, even if it's life itself. Now, at one time, there were thousands of these trees of Lebanon growing on the Syrian range of mountains, but now there's just a few left. In fact, in the year 1745, a visit was made there, and it was discovered that out of all of these thousands of trees that once existed, there were only 15 trees left. And it seems that even this part of our illustration corresponds, that today there are just a few things left. The number is about to be complete, and soon these few that are remaining, they're going to be taken too. Now, like the palm tree, the cedar is always green. It's always vitality. Anytime you look at that tree, it's growing. It's never in a dead-like appearance. And again, it shows the attitude of the righteous. They're always showing signs of life and vitality. Then, the wood of the cedar of Lebanon, when you polish that, it takes on such a beautiful polish that it almost looks like marble. And how is that obtained? Usually it's going to take friction. Anything you want to polish, if your automobile or anything else, if you want to get a high polish, it's just friction. That's the way it's obtained. And really, that's the way we receive a polish. You come and rub one against the other, and If you rub hard enough in the right way, I think that polish will be shining just the way the Lord wants it to.
Often you may hear someone asking or wondering, oh, why can't this one or that one come into truth? I have a brother, I have a mother, father, I have a good friend. He's a wonderful character. He's got a beautiful way of character like some of the other people aren't even that way. Suddenly, if the Lord could use somebody like that, why doesn't he choose one like that? Why doesn't he draw him? But you know, the Lord, he's an excellent cabinet maker. He knows the kind of wood he needs for his temple. Let's illustrate. Supposing that you ask your boy to make a nice parlor table for your home, and you want this to be a first-class piece of furniture, and you tell him just what you want and so on, and he agrees. And so he goes away to the lumber yard and buys the wood, if necessary, and he'll select a very nicely framed pine board, and finally, after working quite some time on it, he finishes this article. Then he begins to try to polish that. And the more he polishes it, he seems the less it gets. He can't get a polish out of that kind of wood. But the expert cabinet makers, why, he'll utterly ignore that nice, plain pine board. But he knows that won't make a good table, that won't take on a polish. So what does he do? He'll select a knotty, a nearly cross grained, just an ugly piece of wood. And when he finishes the article, just as beautiful as you could make it. And isn't that the way we come to the Lord? We're knotty and nearly and ugly in every respect. But when the Lord gets through with us, why, we're going to be just like that marble, just a high power. You see, he knows the kind of wood he needs to make the temple. One of all the woods, the cedars of Lebanon, have a grain that's unusual. If you've ever seen one, you'd have to go to the old country, I presume. But they say that grain, there's something peculiar about a grain in the cedars of Lebanon that just makes it beautiful. There's no other wood that will compare to it. And that's why it's so highly prized. Then there's another characteristic of the cedars of Lebanon, and that is that they entwine their branches. Now, in regular trees, if you would have two trees growing next to each other, and the branches would try to go in, it seems that the two trees would sort of push out and wouldn't permit one branch to enter each other. And if you should cut one tree down that were growing close together, we see that this one tree that would remain standing, one side would like to be cut off. All the branches would be going on one side. The branches wouldn't go on this side. And of course, it looks a very, very spectacle. It wouldn't look right. It really would be a lopsided tree. But you know, with this Lebanon variety, the limbs grow right into each other. Just like so. Right into each other. They have, it seems, an affinity for each other. The picture really is, God's saints are the same way. They don't repel each other. Oh, they twine right in. They like to mingle with each other, and they twine themselves together, as it were, just as these branches. Then along that same line, another peculiarity is, not only do they go up high in this mountain, which is the snow line, this pure atmosphere, but you never see a tree of Lebanon growing separately. That is, one here and one over here. But whenever you see them growing, they're always growing in clusters. They always seem to grow together. You never find one tree growing alone. And the Lord's people don't grow alone either. If you set yourself aside and say, well, now I can study this myself, I don't have to meet with so-and-so, with this class or that class, I can grow myself. Well, that's not true. The Lord arranged it so that we have to meet in clusters, because there are certain things that we're going to obtain by living together, by coming together in meetings that we couldn't obtain any other way. And so just like these trees of Lebanon that always grow in clusters,
the Lord's people back to death when they go to death.
Then there's another thought. By reason of this high position that the word grows, these trees naturally would encounter the worst storms. The higher you go, naturally the storm gets worse. And we find that these trees are never uprooted. You'll never find a cedar of Lebanon that is uprooted. Because as you study this tree, it has the most strongest root system of the trees. And it has a peculiarity that whenever there is a stone present inside, down in the ground, that branch or that root seems to entwine itself around that stone to get a footing. It seems to do that. Whenever there's a stone, to grab that root system and any stone in the area, it'll just twine itself around that stone. And the righteous are the same way. They have one big stone, really, that they can get a hold of, as it were. And that's Jesus Christ. He's that solid rock. And I say, with the picture is this. That's the first thing that we're after, is to get the solid footing so nothing will start to move us one way or another. And so we have this stone that we're always getting our root system, as it were, entwined around it, so that when the storm comes, why, is it the strong we could be? Then the Lebanon cedar wood smells nice. Has a beautiful odor. Some of the women would probably appreciate that, the cedar chest. To some respect, have an odor. If you put open up the lid and you smell that wood, it smells, has a nice smell. Not as much as the cedar of Lebanon, but it's related to it. Now, this odor, the reason they make cedar chests out of cedar wood, is to repel insects, naturally. Insects will not attack cedar wood because of this peculiar odor. The insects just seem to run away from it. They don't like it. And isn't that true about a skink? There's something about a skink that is kind of it's more offensive to other people, others of the world, I mean. They come in contact with you, and as soon as they find out who you are, they just lose your effect, don't they? Your smell, they don't appreciate that smell. For them, it's not an odor. And they can't stand our smell, as it were. Even if they find out the Christians are there, they're about, and they move away, just like these insects do with the cedar wood. We're repulsive to them. When the slow growth of the Lebanon, its longevity, correctly illustrates the steady growth of grace and knowledge. You know, the saints never grow in a quick fashion, but God has a method. It goes slowly, but slowly, up, up, up. And both of these trees that we're speaking of, the longevity is extremely good. 100 years for a tree such as a date palm, and these trees about the same, showing that they grow surely but steady. Then, from the locality of these cedars of Lebanon, there flows a river which enters into the Mediterranean Sea. And when you look at some of the meanings of these words, they're significant. For instance, this word, Kadesha, that river that flows from this locality of the cedars, that means holy, a holy river. And when you read in the book of Revelation, there John speaks of a symbolic river coming from 144,000 springs. And then this river joins up, as it were, and forms a big river that comes from underneath the throne. And this picture shows us how the church, these cedars of Lebanon, as it were, this is the place that they originate. They all come to this one place and they form this river to supply the needs of the people. And now we considered two important truths. But the psalmist speaks yet of another truth. And in Psalm 37:35, he says, now there's another truth. He says, I have seen the wicked in great power, spreading himself like a green bay tree. this tree, you'll notice, is assigned to the wicked. David seen the wicked in great power spreading themselves like a green bay tree. Well, let's see, why is this tree so different from the palm tree or the cedar of Lebanon? To the casual observer, the green bay tree is a beautiful tree. You look at it from a distance, and now it looks nice. You'd like to have it in the front of your home, in the front of your lawn. It looks so nice. It's an ornament. That is, it appears well at a distance. But if you come close to that tree, the green bay tree, and then you get a little underneath the branches and you look up, you're disappointed. All you see there is branches without leaves, crooked and tiny and everything else. All you see is sort of a cover of leaves. And from the outside looks beautiful, but from underneath it's just a mess. And the wicked are just that tree, aren't they? You look at them at a distance, the fine gentlemen, fine women. But when you come close and meet your acquaintance, associate with them a little bit, I've seen you disappointed. Then, unlike the soft-hearted palm, the green bay tree on the opposite side is the hardest in the center. You see, the palm tree is really soft and spongy inside, but not this tree. This tree is just as hard as anything in the center, and it's soft on the outside. And so that pictures the heart condition of these wicked. And then, this green bay tree, it doesn't bear any fruit. But instead, it has a seed that perpetuates its kind of a tree. And this seed is very deceptive because it looks almost like a fruit. You look at it close enough and you think, well, that must be the fruit of the tree. But soon you'll find out that that's just a seed. And usually, what appears to be fruit on the part of these wicked, it really is deception, isn't it? And then the root. The root compared to the root of a palm tree, why, the root of this green bay tree, if you took a picture, if you cut that ground down, those roots are all over. Any place you could find room, they're just all over. And that pictures the selfish and the grasping disposition of this characteristic of the wicked. They're just all over with their hands, any place you get their hands on. Then, the green bay tree, it's hard to destroy it. You can burn that green bay tree down, and wait a little bit, I'll come to see. You can't burn it down. This pictures how difficult it is to stamp out this wickedness in a person, the heart condition, the selfishness that exists there. Then the leaves of this green bay tree have a very disagreeable odor. If you would take a bunch of these leaves and you crush them in your hand and you smell them, immediately you would get an intense headache. There's something about that odor in those leaves. It causes the human head to take offense to it, and you immediately get a headache. And the lesson for us then is that we should avoid these wicked that David is speaking about. Don't rub against them, because if you do, you're going to get a headache. That odor is so strong that you're not going to feel well after you associate with them. It'll only mean trouble. So now we've considered these trees mentioned by the psalmist. And naturally, he's telling us to emulate the first tree, avoid this third one. And so I trust that this afternoon you've learned something in spiritual forestry, if we may call it that. And may we accept the advice of the psalmist that we should grow like these cedars of Lebanon. And may we bring forth fruit like this date palm. Because if we do, then the psalmist said in that 13th verse, that then you're going to be planted in the house of the Lord. Just like in the Holy of Holies, in Solomon's temple, you had palm trees all around, indicating that if we're faithful, if we produce the fruit that God is interested in, we're going to line the walls, as it were, we're going to be these palm trees that are going to decorate the Holy of Holies in the presence of God, in that antithetical temple. And there, the psalmist says, then the righteous will flourish in the court of God, in his temple. May the Lord add his death.
Thank you, Brother Joseph, for these many beautiful lessons concerning the trees of righteousness.